Picture this. It's April 17th, 2026.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah, so you are standing in this massive cavernous event hall in Shanghai, and the energy in the room is just absolutely electric. I mean, there are over 2,500 partners, developers, and investors from like 34 different countries all gathered around this main stage.
Wow, that's a huge crowd.
Right. So the lights go down, and on this giant screen behind the presenters, a single number flashes in bold text, just the number 10,000.
10,000.
Exactly. That is the exact number of mass-produced humanoid robots that have just rolled off the assembly line of this company called Agibot, which, by the way, is a completely wild achievement when you consider the fact that this company didn't even exist until, what, February 2023?
Yeah, that is just a staggering manufacturing flex. I mean,
Right.
building one working prototype in a lab is hard enough, but setting up the supply chain, the tooling, the quality control to just pump out 10,000 bipedal robots in that time frame, that's a massive physical milestone for the whole industry.
It really does. But here's the twist. The physical robot-like, the gleaming metal, the actuators, the custom motors, that wasn't actually the star of the show that day.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I mean, the founders of Agibot are serious hardware veterans. They originally came from Huawei's hardware division, including this one engineer who was recruited through Huawei's highly selective, incredibly grueling Genius Boy program. So you would totally expect these guys to get up on stage and obsess over servos and titanium alloys.
Right, that's their background.
But they shocked everyone. They didn't really focus on the machine itself. They announced an operating system. Their explicitly stated goal right there on stage was to become the Android of robotics.
And that right there is exactly what we're getting into today, because the mission of today's deep dive is tracing this massive shift we're seeing across the entire industry. Looking at a stack of recent sources covering Agibot, academic labs at Tsinghua University, all the way to tech giants like Tencent and Alibaba.
Yeah, it's happening everywhere.
It is. The through line here is that the real war in robotics isn't actually being fought over metal and motors anymore. That battleground has completely shifted. What we are witnessing now is a frantic race to build a software ecosystem like the actual brain of what we call embodied AI.
So if you are trying to figure out where the AI industry is going next, you really need to hear this. The intelligence is moving from the chat window on your screen into physical bodies that walk around in the real world, and the rules of this game are being written right now.
Exactly.
To really understand this software war, we first need to look at what Agibot is actually trying to build with their whole Android strategy. They call the architecture AIMA, which stands for AI Machine Architecture.
Right, and they're basically pitching AI as the industry's first fully open embodied AI technology system. It's a blatant platform play. You don't just want a factory buying your machine. You want research institutions, third-party partners, and independent developers entirely reliant on your software foundation.
Yeah, they want everyone locked in. And the way they structure AM is branded as 1 plus 3 plus X. It's basically a technology stack. At the dead center, the one is their LinQURS, the core operating system.
Okay, the foundation.
Sitting right on top of that are three distinct development platforms. You have LinkSoul, which is for designing how the robot interacts with people, then Genie Studio, which handles all the data collection and training, and then there is LinkCraft. This is the one that really caught my eye.
Oh, yeah, LinkCraft is fascinating.
It really is. LinkCraft is designed to let a user just drag and drop robot movements, almost like you're, I don't know, editing a timeline in a video editor. Their whole pitch is that they are removing the coding barrier entirely. And then finally, the X is the layer for external developers to plug in their own apps. Their goal for this is incredibly aggressive. By the end of 2026, they want 100,000 developers and 1 million end users locked into this ecosystem.
The ambition is huge, but it's important to look under the hood of what they're actually promising there.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because drag and drop robotics sounds great on a slick slide deck, but how does that actually work in reality? I mean, if I type a simple plain English command into this system, like grab that blue coffee cup on the table, there is a massive, incredibly complex gap between those words and a physical machine calculating the exact rotation, tension, and speed of 17 different physical joints.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you grab a ceramic cup without either dropping it or, crushing it into dust?
What's fascinating here is how Agibot attempts to bridge that exact void between abstract meaning and physical movement. They use an underlying architecture they call Villa, That's vision, language, latent, action.
Okay, villa.
Yeah, and it is heavily modeled after human biology, breaking the whole process down into three distinct cognitive steps.
So it's not just one big AI trying to do everything at once, like a massive brain.
No, not at all. It's entirely compartmentalized. Step one uses a vision language model, specifically one called Intern VL2B. This acts as the robot's eyes and its basic language comprehension. It looks at the cameras, identifies the blue cup, and understands your verbal command, but it doesn't know how to move.
Right. It just sees it.
Exactly. So step two is where they introduce the latent planner. Think of this as the human brain's prefrontal cortex. It doesn't communicate with the muscles. It just plans the sequence of work on a high cognitive level by generating what they call latent action tokens.
I see. So it's acting like a project manager. It translates grab cup into a logical checklist like extend arm open hand to 4 inches, lower hand, close hand.
Precisely. It builds the strategy.
Yeah.
Then comes step three, which is the action expert.
Mm.
If the planner is the prefrontal cortex, the action expert is the human cerebellum. It governs muscle memory and coordination.
Okay, so it takes the checklist.
Right. It takes that logical checklist and runs it through a diffusion model.
Right.
This translates the high-level plan into smooth, continuous, real-time joint movements. It solves the exact problem you brought up, turning a concept into the micro-adjustments of 17 different winding motors.
And according to the sources we're looking at, they didn't just train this in a vacuum. They built something called Agibot World in partnership with the Shanghai AI Laboratory. They collected over 1 million trajectories from 100 actual physical robots operating in real-world environments.
Oh, wow. So homes, retail stores, factory floors.
Exactly. It wasn't just a computer simulation. It was real-world messy data.
The physical data collection is vital. And they claim this model, which they call GEO-1, achieved top scores on simulation benchmarks and even functions effectively when ported onto third-party robotic arms, like those made by Franca.
That's impressive.
It is. But that said, it is crucial to keep in mind that these performance metrics are entirely self-reported by Agibot. Independent third-party verification is still lacking, so we really have to view those specific performance numbers through the lens of their aggressive push for market dominance.
Yeah, take it with a grain of salt. It clearly shows an industrial ambition, though. Agibot is trying to build this walled garden. But while they are busy trying to own the commercial ecosystem, there's a glaring problem holding the rest of the industry back. Robots literally speak different physical languages. And that is the exact academic bottleneck that researchers over at Tsinghua University have been attacking.
This brings us to a really significant breakthrough published at ICLR 2025, which is a top-tier global AI conference. A team at Tsinghua developed a model called RDT-1B.
RDT-1B, what does that stand for?
It stands for Robotics Diffusion Transformer. It operates on 1.2 billion parameters, meaning it basically has 1.2 billion tiny computational knobs adjusting how it thinks, which currently makes it the largest diffusion-based foundation model specifically designed for bimanual manipulation.
Bimanual manipulation. So in plain English, that's two-handed coordinated robotic movement, right?
Exactly. Using both hands together.
That raises a question, though, for anyone who isn't building robots in their garage. Why is a two-handed operation so incredibly difficult for an AI? I mean, we've seen single robotic arms welding cars for decades. Why does adding a second hand just break the AI's brain?
Well, it comes down to a massive explosion of variables. When you have one arm, the math is relatively linear and contained. But the moment you introduce a second arm that has to work in tandem with the first, the possible combinations of movement just multiply exponentially.
Give me an example of that.
Let's say the left hand grabs a cup while the right hand pours water into it from a heavy pitcher. Think about the shifting center of gravity as the water moves from one vessel to the other. There are thousands of successful ways a human might execute that sequence physically.
Right. I could hold it high, low, tilted.
Exactly. If an AI relies on older training methods, it tries to learn the average of all those successful movements.
Which sounds logical in theory, but in the physical world, the mathematical average of two totally different successful paths is usually a terrible path.
Oh, it's awful. It creates a mathematically perfect but physically awkward middle path. The hands end up missing each other, or the robot knocks the cup over because it miscalculated the shifting weight of the water. Tsinghua attacked this by bringing a diffusion transformer, or DIT structure, into robotics.
DRT, okay.
And this is an architecture that has been proven to work wonders in complex language and image generation models. Applied to physical movement, It allows the AI to understand and predict highly variable combinations without just dumbing them down to a useless average.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because from what I read, the algorithm wasn't even the biggest roadblock for researchers. The biggest roadblock was the physical data itself.
The training data.
Yeah, historically, robotics labs all over the globe have used entirely different hardware to run their experiments. Like, Stanford might use a 6-axis arm, MIT might use a 7-axis arm. Their hands have completely different joint structures, the cameras are at different angles. It created a literal Tower of Babel.
Right, everyone's speaking a different language.
Exactly. You couldn't train one big AI on all the world's data because the physical languages were entirely incompatible.
It was incredibly fragmented. You had terabytes of highly valuable robotic training data sitting in silos, totally useless to anyone who didn't own that exact specific brand of robot arm.
But Tsinghua created what they call a physically interpretable unified action space. They essentially mapped the movements, the joint angles, and the physics of all these vastly different robot arms into a single unified mathematical format. They built a universal translator for physical movement.
That is the true academic triumph of RDT-1B right there.
Mm.
But to actually make that universal translator work, they had to handle some incredibly messy, unstable physics data. When you mix data from a lightweight 6-axis arm with a heavy-duty 7-axis arm, the numerical values for things like torque and velocity fluctuate wildly.
I can imagine.
And during AI training, this causes a phenomenon called gradient explosion.
Gradient explosion. Okay, let me guess. It's like trying to translate a recipe where one chef uses cups and the other uses grams, but every time the AI tries to calculate the conversion, the numbers multiply in a loop until the oven temperature reads 1,000,000 degrees. The math just spirals out of control and the system crashes.
That is a very, very accurate way to visualize it. The learning algorithm just destabilizes. To prevent this gradient explosion, the Tsinghua team applied specific normalization techniques called QK norm and RMS norm.
Which do what exactly?
These act as mathematical shock absorbers. They keep the learning process stable regardless of how wild the incoming physical data gets. On top of that, they utilized multilayer perceptrons, or MLPs.
How do MLPs help with the physical world?
Well, textbook physics is neat and linear, right? But real-world physics is chaotic and nonlinear. If a robot pushes a block across smooth glass, the math is easy. If it pushes that same block across a rough piece of sandpaper, or if the robot's motor is slightly worn out and lags by 1 millisecond, the math changes drastically.
Right. The real world is messy.
Exactly. MLPs allow the AI to adapt to that messy, unpredictable, nonlinear reality like friction and wear and tear, rather than assuming a perfect frictionless world.
And because they built that stabilized, unified mathematical space, RDT-1B was able to ingest 46 entirely different data sets from around the world. It learned from over 1 million episodes of training data. The results were incredible zero-shot and few-shot learning capabilities.
Which is huge.
It really is, meaning you could drop the robot into a completely new environment it had never seen before, and it could master a new physical task in just 1 to 5 tries. When Tsinghua open-sourced the model, it immediately shot to the #1 trending spot for embodied AI on Hugging Face.
It's a massive leap forward. You have Agibot pushing a commercial platform and Tsinghua cracking the foundational data problem to make models smarter. But having these massive, highly intelligent models creates another huge practical hurdle. How do you actually put a brilliant billion-parameter brain inside a walking piece of metal?
Right. This brings us to a massive, unforgiving physical limitation. Imagine a busy factory setting. The floor boss walks up to a humanoid robot and says, "Sort the blue boxes on the 3rd shelf, but watch out for the forklift." The cognitive reasoning required to understand that sentence, visually identify the boxes, map out the geometry of the room, and plan a safe route, that requires a massive, incredibly power-hungry AI model.
And a model of that size usually lives inside a heavily air-conditioned data center drawing megawatts of power.
Exactly. But down on the factory floor, you have a heavy two-legged machine. Just to keep from falling over while walking, it needs to calculate its center of gravity and adjust its ankle and knee joints like 50 to 500 times a second. You physically cannot fit a massive server rack inside a robot's chest. The battery would be drained in 5 minutes, and the heat would literally melt the wiring.
It would just catch on fire.
Yeah, basically. But if you try to put the whole brain in the cloud and stream the instructions to a dumb robot over Wi-Fi, a tiny 0.1-second communication delay means the robot misses a step, loses its balance, and crashes to the concrete floor.
It is a fundamental conflict.
Yeah.
You have complex cognitive reasoning, which takes time and massive computing power, fighting against real-time physical agility, which requires instant zero-latency reactions.
It reminds me of how you structure a massive corporation. You absolutely need an executive team. That's the cloud. They are in the boardroom mapping out the complex high-level strategy, identifying market trends, prioritizing the big goals, but you cannot have the CEO making the decision on how fast a conveyor belt should move.
No, that would be a disaster.
Right. You need a highly responsive floor manager. The robot's internal computer making split-second operational decisions locally. If you don't have that local control, the whole factory grinds to a halt the second the Wi-Fi blinks.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that corporate analogy perfectly describes Tencent's solution to this latency problem, which they unveiled in April 2026. They call it the dual architecture of HY Embodied 0.5. Tencent essentially looked at the latency problem and decided to just split the brain in two.
The cloud and the edge.
Yes, exactly. Up in the cloud lives the giant MoE, or mixture of experts model. This is your executive team. It boasts a staggering 407 billion parameters for handling deep reasoning, processing complex visual data, and understanding the overarching physics of the world.
But wait, running a 407 billion parameter model constantly, that would bankrupt you in server costs, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So they utilize sparse computation.
So it's not firing on all cylinders all the time.
Right, it acts selectively. It only activates the specific expert neural networks needed for a given task. If it's sorting boxes, it turns off the networks trained for welding. It only turns on about 32 billion parameters at a time. This saves massive amounts of computing cost while still delivering world-class intelligence. That cloud brain takes the boss's command, breaks it into a digestible high-level plan, and sends it down.
And down on the floor, the floor manager takes over.
Right. Down in the physical robot lives the lightweight MOT, or mixture of transformers model. This edge model runs on just 4 billion parameters total, with only 2 billion active during inference.
That's tiny compared to the cloud.
Exactly. 2 billion parameters is small enough to run incredibly smoothly on the robot's own internal chips. It ensures instant real-time motor control without relying on an internet connection to keep its balance. It takes the cloud's big strategy and handles all the micro-adjustments locally. And it's highly effective. Tencent reported that this small edge model beat out similarly sized models in 16 out of 22 evaluations for perception and planning.
So Tencent established this highly efficient cloud and edge split-brain architecture. It proved you could solve the physical limits of the robot. But just a couple of months later, in June 2026, Alibaba entered the fray. And they took this split-brain architecture and completely weaponized it economically.
Yeah, Alibaba's entry really shifts the conversation. We move away from just discussing technical capability and get into pure, ruthless market dominance.
Alibaba launched their Qwen robot series, and they decided to take Tencent's structure and split the duties even further, creating three highly specialized distinct models. You have Qwen Robot Manit, which is dedicated entirely to controlling the hands and arms. You have Qwen Robot Nav, which handles the feet, balance, and navigation. And finally, you have Qwen Robot World, which operates as the simulator. It actually predicts future physics and outcomes in the environment.
If we go back to your corporate analogy, Alibaba didn't just give us a CEO and a floor manager. They introduced highly specialized middle management. You have a head of logistics and robot nav, a head of manual labor and robot manip, and a BISC assessor in robot world.
I love that. Middle management robots.
And the training scope they deployed here is massive. The navigation model alone was trained on over 15 million samples. But the really notable achievement is the manipulation model. Alibaba trained Robot Manip entirely on open source data, over 38,100 hours of it.
And wait, that is normally a disadvantage, right? Relying on messy, publicly available open source data instead of incredibly precise proprietary data collected in a million-dollar lab.
Usually, yes.
Yet Robot Manip still dominated third-party physical machine evaluations. It took the top two spots in the RoboChallenge assessments across 30 real-world tasks.
Yeah.
How did it overcome the messy data?
The secret weapon is that third model, Robot World. Because Robot World is so good at predicting the physical consequences of an action, the manipulation model doesn't need perfect, clean data. It can try something, use the world model to predict if the couple drop, and adjust on the fly.
Oh, wow. So it's constantly self-correcting.
Exactly. It compensates for the imperfect open source training through brilliant real-time prediction. But the technical prowess isn't even the biggest story here. It's the economics. Alibaba priced their Qwen 3.7 Plus multimodal agent at just $0.40 per 1 million input tokens.
40 cents for a million tokens. That is an almost unbelievably cheap price point for complex intelligence.
It effectively makes the AI brain power a rounding error in the cost of running a factory.
So what does this all mean? When you look at Alibaba's bottom-of-the-barrel pricing, Tencent's highly efficient split-brain architecture, and Ajibot's push for an overarching operating system, the actual business strategy of the Chinese tech giants becomes crystal clear. Right now, across the globe, there are around 150 different companies furiously trying to build physical humanoid robots. They are engaged in a bloody low-margin price war over titanium, high-torque joints, and lithium batteries.
It's an absolute race to the bottom on hardware manufacturing costs.
But these software giants, Tencent, Alibaba, the folks building AM, they're just stepping right over that physical bloodbath. They're focused on building the underlying intelligence infrastructure, all backed by heavy-duty domestic hardware like Huawei's Ascend chips. They don't care whose shiny corporate logo is stamped on the robot's chest, as long as the brain inside that robot is running on their operating system and pulling from their cloud.
This raises an important question. And frankly, a rather terrifying implication for global competitors. If this software standardizes, if the Android of robotics truly takes hold and offers world-class bimanual intelligence for 40 cents a million tokens, foreign hardware companies might find themselves backed into a very tough corner.
Because they won't be able to compete on the software front.
Just exactly. Building a competing foundational AI from scratch requires billions of dollars in data center investment, massive power grids, and years of training. If a robotics company can't match that capital expenditure, they will inevitably be relegated to just building the physical metal bodies. They become a manufacturer of empty shells. Mm. And to make your beautifully engineered shell actually think, walk, and work on a factory floor, you will be forced to subscribe to Chinese cloud APIs.
It's the ultimate ecosystem lock-in. You own the body, but they own the mind.
The intelligence shifts from being a feature you build to a utility you have to rent. Just like electricity or water.
Wow. Let's recap the journey of our deep dive today. We started with Ajibot's massive hardware milestone and their underlying ambition to build a drag-and-drop OS to corner the developer market. We looked at how Tsinghua University cracked the universal data translator, stabilizing messy physical math to make advanced bimanual learning possible for everyone. We saw Tencent solve the physical latency limit, the whole battery and Wi-Fi problem, by splitting the brain between a sparse cloud executive and a fast-edge floor manager. And finally, we saw Alibaba come in to dominate that ecosystem with specialized middle management models and ultra-cheap, highly capable intelligence. The true value in this robotics revolution is not going to be in the metal being forged today. The money and the ultimate power is in the rented minds.
And that leaves us with a final thought I want you to mull over as you watch this industry unfold. If the future of robotics is truly an ecosystem where a company buys an empty physical vessel, but rents its consciousness from a massive tech company's cloud, who is legally and morally responsible when that robot makes a physical mistake that harms someone? Is it the manufacturer who built the physical body and the failing brakes, or the tech giant who rented out the brain that told it to walk forward?
The ultimate diagnostic muddy water. We've moved from writing code that lives on a screen to writing the rules of actual physical consequences in the real world. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the physical tech world around you.